Kathleen Martin back with us on Coast to Coast with her latest work, Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. It's a great story and it's a great read, and she's next. George Norrie back with you along with Kathleen Martin, who works full-time as an author, alien abduction researcher, lecturer. She has more than 22 years experience in the field as the niece of the late Betty and Barney Hill, the first abductees whose story stirred worldwide interest. It's an amazing story. She is the co-author of Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience with the late Stanton Friedman. And Kathleen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be back again.
And I've got to tell you, just reading this epitaph with the late Stanton Friedman is so depressing and sad. What a great guy he was.
Oh, he was. I miss him. We worked closely together, communicated often. I loved his sense of humor. Working together was always injected by his humor, and it was such a joyful experience, and also intellectually stimulating.
Yes.
So I just, it was fantastic, and I miss him.
Ironically, he was my first interview when I was 21 years old in Detroit, Michigan, Kathleen.
Yes.
And you know that story, of course. And then we were with him in Columbus, Ohio, and then he passed away going back to the Toronto airport after that event.
Yes, yes. So what a shock, in a sense. I knew that he was getting older and not feeling as well as he had been in the past, but still, I was waiting for that phone call when he arrived home, as he always called me before and after.
Oh, my God, he adored you. He would always talk about you on our shows.
Yes, I know he did. We had a great working relationship together, and that developed into a wonderful friendship, and I was so sad when I learned that he had passed.
He looked good in Columbus, Ohio. One would never think that he had some severe issues, and I assume he died of a heart attack at the airport.
Yes, it was a heart attack. Yeah. And, you know, Stanton had in recent years been having difficulty walking through the terminals. That long walk, pulling his case, had quite an impact on him.
Mm-hmm.
I was encouraging him to take a wheelchair, but I guess that was something that he really didn't want
to do. He didn't want to do that. And didn't his son die a couple of years before this of a heart attack also?
No, his son, he's lost two sons. One died a few years ago. He was 50 years old when he died, but it was not a heart attack.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, he's in heaven looking down at this interview right now.
I suspect that he is.
He's probably going to try to leak in Gray Basket somehow.
or maybe he doesn't talk to the squirrels in his backyard.
Exactly. Hey, tell me, what was it like with Benny and Barney Hill? I mean, do you remember growing up and meeting them and knowing them?
Oh, yes. I was 13 years old when they had their experience.
Okay.
I was a teenager. And as soon as they arrived home, well, they slept for a few hours. And then Betty was on the phone with my mother when I arrived home from school in the afternoon. And Betty was very concerned that they might have been exposed to some kind of contamination because the craft was so close to them. And we had a neighbor who was a physicist. And so my mother was going to phone the physicist as soon as he arrived home from work and get some advice from him. And the strange thing was that the advice he gave was, if you have a compass, take it out to the car and see how the needle reacts.
Yeah, interesting.
You know it's going to react around the battery, but you know, there were shiny spots on the trunk that hadn't been there the day before that caused the compass needle to spin and spin, indicating a counter-rotating magnetic field.
Was Betty your mother's sister?
Yes, she was.
Wow.
Yes.
What did you all think of as a family of their story?
Well, We believed every word of it.
You did?
Yes, we did. Betty, you know, Betty was a social worker for the state of New Hampshire. They were, Betty and Barney were both active in the civil rights movement. They were upstanding people. They didn't lie. They didn't pull our legs. You know, so we had concern for them over the possibility of contamination, over the distress that this caused, over all of the questions. You know, and Betty was an extremely curious person. She wanted to learn as much as she could about it, just as I have. But Barney just wanted to push it down and away and to forget that it ever happened.
Well, I remember my mother bringing me home a Look magazine article when they wrote the Interrupted Journey about them. And I couldn't put it down, Kathleen. I was hooked at a young age because of that case.
Yes, I have those Look magazine articles. There were two of them that were published in the fall of 1967,
I think.
Seven?
66, 67, something
yes,
like that.
Yes, I think it was 66. It was the year that I graduated from high school, so I know it was 66. And when I graduated, Paul Fusco, who was a photographer for Look magazine, covered my high school graduation. We were going to have the photographs in Look magazine to show what a normal, down-to-earth family we really were. So they ended up not using those photographs. They changed the paper. But it was quite extraordinary for me to have the photographer from Look magazine taking pictures of my graduation and the family and the party that was held after the graduation. And I'll never forget, he had a really fancy car, and he said, "Here are the keys. Take a drive up the road." I was just floored that he offered that to me, and wow.
I had a chance, again, when I was a young radio reporter, to interview via phone Dr. Benjamin Simon, their psychiatrist,
yeah,
who was part of this entire program. And I remember distinctly, Kathleen, asking him, "Were they lying? What do you think? Tell me." And this was back in 1971. I'm interviewing him. And he said, "They weren't lying." He said, "I don't know what happened to them. Under hypnosis, both of them separately told similar stories, which is very intriguing. But whatever happened to them, they believe it happened to them. They're not lying about it." And that was pretty dramatic.
Yes, absolutely. And I had the opportunity to meet Dr. Simon a couple of times. I went with Betty and Barney to his house for dinner in my late teens, and Alan Hynek was there as well, and John Fuller. So it was quite an honor to have had the opportunity to meet them after dinner. I was required to go into a room, and Dr. Simon had turned very loud, bombastic music on, and what I found out later was that he was hypnotizing Betty and Barney in front of Alan Hynek and John Fuller, and of course, he didn't want me to be there to observe any emotional impact that there was.
That's an amazing
story.
So
I'll never forget that memory.
Now, your latest work, Extraterrestrial Contact, tell us about this.
Well, I wrote this book because there has been so much interest in contact experiences, and I wanted to write a book that was full of stories of different types of contact. Yet, as MUFON's, the Mutual UFO Network's, director of experiencer research, I have encountered so many people who are seeking help, who are seeking advice, who want to learn more about their own memories of contact, that I thought it was important to write a comprehensive guide, or I I had intended to call it the Experiencer's Handbook for people who are attempting to come to terms with the things that have happened in their lives regarding contact with what they believe are extraterrestrial entities and non-human entities.
Are these people, Kathleen, tormented?
Some are tormented. You know, it sort of runs the gamut. There are individuals who are having highly positive experiences. They think it's extraterrestrial. They wonder if it might be an angelic. What is going on in their lives? And then it hits every mark along the spectrum to individuals who are having extremely negative experiences with evil, what they call evil entities. About 10% have described evil entities who are, and 6% hostile or sadistic. So then you have to ask, are these extraterrestrial entities or are they non-humans of another type?
Yeah, a lot of things can be happening to a lot of different people. They could be coming from other dimensions. They could be demons. They could be extraterrestrials. It could be a lot. If they're extraterrestrial, and I think most of them probably are, what do you think they're doing with people? Why are they abducting them? Why are they even contacting them?
Well, I think that they're doing a longitudinal genetic study, and that study is generational. According to our research, 50% of the experiencers in our study of 516 experiencers at the Mutual UFO Network stated that it was running in their family, and 60% of our abductee group. This was a study that I did with my team and Dr. Don C. Dondari, a psychologist and statistician recently retired from McGill University, who incidentally was a student at the University of Chicago with Stanton Friedman.
Ah. Now, you draw a line between abductees and contactees. What's the difference?
Well, there is a lot of discussion about all of this. There are some researchers who would like to call all people who have contact with non-human entities contactees. But I have done a great deal of research in this field, dating back into the 1940s, the 1950s, and I like to separate contactees into a separate group, those who are having positive contact either with benevolent extraterrestrials or perhaps they have asked for this contact through CE5s, through out-of-body experiences, through channeling. They are an entirely different group than those at the other end of the spectrum who are the abductee group, because the abductees are taken against their will. And I firmly believe that everyone is entitled to their own experience, that if they have been distressed by what has occurred and they want to call themselves abductees, they deserve, they have the right to do that. And, you know, eventually they might work through all of this with the help of the book that I have written, and be able to maybe think of themselves differently. But, you know, Dr. John Mack used the term experiencer. An experiencer encompasses contactees and abductees. So when I speak in general, I speak of experiencers out of respect for Dr. John Mack and the steps that he took to move us ahead in understanding contact.
Kathleen, can we conclude that some abductees are never brought back to planet Earth, that they're just kept?
I don't know if we can conclude that or not. I know that Some individuals believe that many, many people are taken aboard craft and never return for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that some people have reported military people being on the craft. It's made me wonder if they are actually members of our military or if they have been abducted and retained and forced to work, or are they just the human-looking, benevolent ETs that have come back to assist in our development? You know, that is a question that is not really clear. According to all of the research that we have done, and I'm talking about statistical research, quantitative results. I know if you're talking about simply information that is passed from one person to another, it might seem more prevalent than according to our statistical study. So, you know, that's, as Stanton Friedman would say, that is in my gray bag.
That's it.
I'm attempting to learn more about it. I've been studying this for 30 years, and I still don't have the answer to that question. We do know that many, many people disappear every year, but you have to ask the question, where are they disappearing to? Have they been killed? Have they been lost in the woods? Have they disappeared intentionally? Have they disappeared into an interdimensional portal?
Mm-hmm.
Have they been taken by non-human entities and not returned? There were so many possibilities.
Or all of the above.
Yes, absolutely.
And maybe in some cases, if they are taken by ETs, maybe these folks don't want to come back.
Well, I have spoken with individuals who said that they wish they hadn't come back. And then, in fact, my Uncle Barney, under hypnosis, stated that he wished he had gone with them. And Dr. Simon said to him, why would you have wanted to go with him? And he said, maybe it would prove the existence of God.
That's an interesting take.
Yes.
I would go, but I'd want to come back. How about you?
I would want to come back, too. You know, I have a lot of friends here. I have family,
yeah, exactly.
Children, grandchildren. I would not want to leave Earth at this time.
Plus, they would always wonder, where did you go?
Absolutely.
What happened to her? She's
gone. Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the greatest fears that experiencers who are being taken have, is that they won't be returned and that no one will ever know what happened to them.
Kathleen Martin with us. Her latest book is called Extraterrestrial Contact. Her website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. This is, I believe, your fifth book, right?
It is my fifth book, yes.
Beautiful. Indeed. When we come back after the break, I want to ask you a little bit about MUFON's experience or research, a study of 516 people. I also noticed you threw in a dedication in the book to the late Bud Hopkins, who was a great investigator with alien abductees.
Absolutely. I had a great deal of respect for Bud, knew him personally, spoke to his group, spent the night in his apartment in New York City, was hypnotized by him, and had a great admiration for Bud.
He was on my show with me before he passed on, Kathleen, talking about his work, about the head of the UN who had seen extraterrestrials and the UFOs. You remember that story?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Great story indeed. Okay, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment with Kathleen Martin and talk more about her work, Extraterrestrial Contact. And as I mentioned, MUFON conducted a study of 516 people. What exactly did they learn from it? Next hour, we'll take your phone calls, questions for Kathleen. Maybe you've been abducted. Maybe you've been contacted. If you want to share part of that story with us, too, go ahead and do it. And like us on Facebook. Do follow us on Twitter. And don't forget our official free YouTube channel at Coast to Coast AM Official. George Norrie back with you, along with Kathleen Martin. We're talking about her latest work called Extraterrestrial Contact. Kathleen Mufon, the experience or research study that you're part of studied 516 people. Tell us what happened.
Yes. Well, members of the Mufon's experience or research team, often with advanced degrees, and I developed 118 questions in a questionnaire, and we had a target goal of 500 experiencers that we wanted to take part in this. Then we had phase two of our study, and in phase two of our study, we wanted to use a psychometric device in order to identify those who had UFO abduction syndrome. Now, this device was developed by Bud Hopkins and Ted Davis, who is the psychiatric social worker in New York. And it, Dr. Don C. Donderi was involved in this. He was the person who standardized it. He spent his life as a social researcher. And so there were initially 600 questions, and he reduced it over time to 65 questions. And this device would determine those who had UFO abduction syndrome because they had the knowledge and the emotional signature of this, as opposed to a group of simulators, or what Don calls wannabes, and then a third group were members of the general public who had very little knowledge about UFOs or contact, and were people who, in this study, might want to be throwing us off track or skewing our results.
Would so they be like a placebo?
Could be. I thought of them more as hoaxers.
Yeah.
We're simply trying to cause problems with our study. So you can always accept that. And we had a couple of different methods to weed them out and eliminate them from the study. So we had many more than 516 who participated, but in the end, only 516 were included.
What were some of the remarkable things that you heard from them?
We were extremely interested in, for example, how old they were when they had contact for the first time. And there were two different groups that I want to give you the results on because they're different. So in first contact, overall, 72% of the experiencers were less than 20 years old.
Wow, that's high.
Yes, and about, I was amazed at this result because back when Betty and Barney were taken, they were in their early 40s. And so that is high, and it indicates generational contact. 6%, though, were more than 40 when they had first contact. And we discovered that this 6% were having highly negative contact. So it makes us wonder if this is more demonic as opposed to ET. We asked also how many times they were taken. A very small percentage said they were 10%, taken more than 50 times. Yet, on the average, 54% could only remember being taken four times. It doesn't mean they were taken more than that, or less than that. They simply didn't remember being taken more than four times. We wanted to know if other members of the family had observed UFOs, and not just a light in the sky. Were these UFOs close up and personal, less than 500 feet in the distance? 65% of the entire group of the experiencers stated that family members had had contact, and 70% of the abductees. We were interested in sleep paralysis. You know, for years and years, the skeptics have said it's all sleep paralysis. So we have a couple of very interesting results of that. 74% of the experiencers and 90% of the abductees said they've experienced sleep paralysis, where they have been woken up, paralyzed, able to move only their eyes. But then we went on and said, were you awake? Did you see non-human entities in your environment? And then you became paralyzed. For the abductee group, it was 60%.
Huge.
Yes, only 36% for the experiencers.
Did any of them, Kathleen, describe what these entities may have looked like?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, that was another question we had. What was the most prevalent group? That was grays, both the taller ones and the shorter ones who we think of as the assistants. They're the ones who take you to and from the craft to undress you, dress you for sometimes in other people's clothing, sometimes putting your clothing on backwards.
Are they little grays?
They're little ones. They're the ones who are about 3.5 to 4 feet tall. But then there's the other group who are taller, who seem to be, to most individuals, sentient beings, that they have emotions, they communicate. They're the ones who take the experiencers to craft time and time again. They're the ones who do the physical examinations or medical procedures. They are the educators, the scientists. So they're different from the little ones. They're more 4.5 to 5.5 feet tall, and generally have a relationship with the experiencer, so that the experiencer might be terrified when and in the fight or flight mode when they have these little ones come into their environment. But by the time they arrive on the craft, they are settled down. They're feeling that they are in a familiar environment. And so the second most prevalent type, by putting the grays in one category, are the human types, those who...
Those that look like us.
Look very similar to us. They're all about 6 feet tall. They have... light brown or blonde hair. Their eyes are somewhat bigger than the average human eye. They might communicate telepathically as well, but they are generally pretty nice to be around and treat humans pretty well. Third group, insectoids.
Like the praying mantis, yeah.
Who are often seen working with the grays, and the praying mantis type are often the ones who act as the physicians on the craft. Then you have the reptilian type.
Okay.
Who different groups of reptilians. We divided that up so that we would find out how many are interacting with positive reptilians and also the negative type. And there are positive reptilians. They're about the same amount as the insectoids, about 20 to 30%, and then you have the negative, the reptilians who are more the draconian type. We asked about hybrids as well, and about 22% had observed hybrids on the craft. We asked about MyLab abductions, where people who behave in a military fashion are seen working with a group of non-human entities. That's about 13%.
Was there any commonality of where they may have been coming from, like Betty and Barney Hill described the Zeta Reticuli star system?
We did, in fact, ask if they had been shown a star system, and only about 10% had viewed
That's it.
Star map. Most people did not know where they came from, only that they had traveled through space. and time, depending upon the group. The human-looking types had sort of jumped through space and time. They were more like time travelers coming back, had once lived on this planet, whereas the grays appeared to be coming from another star system and maybe inhabited many different planets in different star systems.
That's pretty dramatic work. And what was your conclusion?
Well, my conclusion was that experiencers receive many gifts as a result of having this kind of contact. We asked, would you want it to stop? And 71% of the experiencers said, no, I want it to continue. 75% of the abductee group, well, why do you want it to continue? Because of the information that I am receiving and want to continue to receive. A very high percentage had become more spiritual, more psychic, they're empathic, and they feel more highly intelligent than they were when they began this. They view the world differently. They have learned to become good stewards to our environment. There's a great environmental concern among those non-human entities that our current behavior could lead to environmental collapse. And, you know, dating all the way back to the early 1950s, there has also been that anti-nuclear message. They believe that humans are out of sync. Our behavior, our brains are still primitive, yet we have developed the technology that we could use to destroy ourselves and life on this planet. So many have said they are working toward upgrading the human genome and also bringing about these spiritual changes in humans for the benefit of all, so that we will survive.
Now, did any of these 516 people, Kathleen, describe a horrendous experience?
Absolutely.
Oh,
there
boy.
Was a very small percentage, about 6%, who said that these entities were hostile, sadistic, evil, 10%.
Which is what David Jacobs says.
Yes, it was like going to a living hell where horrible things were happening. Torture, murder, eating humans. I wonder if they are actually being taken to a living hell, if these are demonic entities from the astral plane who have for some reason attached to these individuals. They're confused. They believe that it is ETs, but I have worked with some of these individuals, and these attachments can be removed and are removed when they realize that they need to seek another kind of help from a religious person or from a shaman or a light worker, somebody who is able to remove these very sadistic and evil entities that have attached due to the lower vibrational frequency of that human.
They don't sound like the ETs, do they?
They are not the ETs.
No.
I'm convinced of that. And the reason I became convinced is that I was working with an individual who was having these experiences. I knew that his mental status was fine. He didn't have a major mental illness. He was highly productive, professional, in fact. And as I went on to try to help him to overcome what he was experiencing and learn more about it, suddenly I received the message that was so horrible that I'm sure my vibrational frequency lowered. And in a moment, this thing attached to my environment, maybe not to my body.
And not in a pleasant way, I take it.
And not in a pleasant way at all. I've never had an experience like this in my entire life, where all of a sudden there was a dark shadow over me. Although I always sleep well, don't wake up during the night, I was having difficulty sleeping. I was beginning to feel pain in my body, which I don't normally have. And then after about a month, I started to receive these messages from this thing, that, and it was saying, you're going to die soon.
Oh, great.
Why don't you just do it? At that point, I knew. I had never received those messages before. I knew what was going on. I told the person I was working with what had happened to me. I said, you need to go and have this attachment removed. He did, and he was suddenly fine again. It's very sudden the way this happens. I also had mine removed. And just overnight, it's gone. The higher vibrational frequency, everything is fine. I'm happy. I'm sleeping through the night again and no body pain. It's amazing what these negative attachments can do.
Kathleen, when we come back, let's talk about the possibility of alien implants in some of these people, the propulsion system. Did any of them describe what they thought it might be? And, of course, we'll take phone calls and questions for you next on Coast to Coast AM.